Hi, I'm Rami.
And I'm Shannon, and this is Workplace Hugs, where we talk about interesting things we've read, learned, or experienced to help all of us expand our life toolkit with a whole bunch of empathy, but without a whole new degree. Rami, what are we talking about this week?
What is this? What's this? We are talking about the Nightmare Before Christmas? Yes.
Oh, Talia loves that movie, and I don't hate that movie. That movie never appealed to me as a child, and I'm very confused as to what is appealing about it to my child.
Prince, exactly the same way. I showed it to him last year, and I was like, oh, he's for sure not going to like this thing. Because we were, like, watching holiday movies or something, and he just, like, was like, nope, that's it. That's the one. I love it. Like, kids are obsessed with Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, why weren't we, though, as kids?
I don't know.
I think it was maybe a different Disney era. Just, like, Disney couldn't get past era.
How scary it was.
Maybe. Okay, here's my working theory, and then we'll actually get to the topic at hand. My working theory is that in our Disney era, like, when we were growing up, it was very much, like, happy ending stories, you know, or, like Aladdin, Little Mermaid, whatever. I'm aging us now, you guys. But now I feel like there's this arc in the Disney narrative that's all about the villains, you know, like there's this villain trend and it's like cool to be a villain a little bit, or it's like the villain stories are now cool. So I think the scary is appealing to our kids these days.
But Shannon, you know, this movie is like 20 years old.
Rami, it is more than 20 years old.
30 years old. It just hit an anniversary. I think it hit its 30th.
I'm going to look this up right now while you continue forward. It is for sure more than 20 years old. I remember seeing this 1993. It's 30 years old.
That's what I'm saying. It's 30 years old. So, Shannon, this is the same time as all the movies you just named.
Yeah, I know. That's my point. But I'm saying I think it appeals to the kids now. This old movie appeals to the kids now because there's these storylines about villains in the Disney movies of now.
No, for sure.
That are more interesting.
Like, it was ahead of its time, is all you're saying.
Yeah. But villains were not cool. Scary shit was not cool in the 90s when we were kids.
Yeah, Jafar and Scar were not heroes at that point.
No, not at all. Okay, continue forward. Jack Skellington.
So, I guess I should give an overview of this movie. Jack is the Pumpkin King. There are like holidays and there's holiday towns, and those towns exist to make the holidays come to life. So he lives in Halloween Town. He is the Pumpkin King. Him and his town work on that holiday all year long. They're getting ready for it. Similar to how you think of Christmas town, like the North Pole. They finish Christmas and then they go right into prepping for the next Christmas. Like, that's where their focus is the whole time. It's like that holiday. And so Jack finishes another successful Halloween and starts to question his existence and what is he doing, and decides to take over Christmas. Because it seems interesting and everything about it is new. He doesn't understand any of it. He calls the proprietor Sandy Claus, like Claus. He even writes it on his board with like a lobster hook. And then everything goes awry because he should not be in charge of Christmas because he makes it a scary Christmas instead of a merry Christmas. So I've got a few things and some things we'll talk about, but it's just such a good movie, and I think there's a lot of depth to it and a lot of learnings from it. And honestly, Prince has watched it like 45 times.
Really?
It was gonna be an episode anyways because I'm watching it incessantly.
Wow.
So this comes from me having seen this movie infinite times. Prince has two sets of Jack Skellington pajamas that are his favorite.
This is devotion right here. Oh my gosh.
He has two sets of shirts that are his, like, because he wears like a uniform during the week. It's like almost every weekend he wears one, if not both, of his Jack Skellington shirts. He has Jack Skellington gibbets on his shoes. His bed sheets right now are like fleecy Jack Skellington ones.
Wow. This is
kid loves
true devotion. Talia's not on that
Zero,
level.
Loves Zero, loves Lock, Shock, and Barrel. He loves all the things. Okay, Sally.
But do you love this movie?
I like it.
You like it. Did you? But you didn't even like it when you were a kid, but now you like it as an adult?
No, this is what I'm saying. Okay. This is him. This is all him. This isn't me, like,
so you're like him. Your level of like has not shifted from childhood to adulthood.
It has increased probably because I didn't watch it as a child because I was freaked out by it.
Yeah, I just see in your notes here that you said such a good movie, and I was thinking
it is such a good movie.
What? No, it's not.
It's also like a very brisk, like 70 or 80 minutes. Like it's a very short movie.
Yeah.
As well, and it's all stop motion animation, which is cool. Okay, so the first piece of advice takeaway from this movie is new perspective. Such a good lesson, I think, for everybody. Sometimes you just need a new perspective, not a whole new life, right? Jack decides he's going to become Sandy Claus because he needs a whole new life, which is not a good idea. But it is a great message. If you're feeling stale, change it up, try new things, but not at the expense of your core identity. So, Shannon, let me ask you this simple question. How do we find our core identity and hold true to it?
I think my answer is going to contradict what you're advocating for, which I guess is going to make for an interesting episode. In this moment, my reaction is, I don't know that we're meant to have core identities that remain unchanged our whole life long. I think
that's fair.
Here's the metaphor that's coming to mind as I'm thinking this through a little bit. I think it's like a mixing board. You know, like I'm picturing people who are doing final production on an audio track or something. It's like, sure, maybe there are core elements, but there are seasons of my life where, man, the drums were turned way down and the only thing you could hear was the lead guitar. And there are other seasons of life where it's been more balanced. And there are some seasons of life where it's been quite the opposite. It's like all drums, no lead guitar. We're just listening to percussion all day long. So maybe in that sense, there is core identity. How do you find it? How do we find our core identity and hold true to it? I think it's, I don't know that I have a set step process that you can find. I think it comes from introspective time, from spending some time like sitting with, I wouldn't ever encourage a client to ask the question of like, who have I been or what is my core identity? And instead more focus on like, what am I longing for at this point in my life? Like, what do I want to be in deepest service to at this point in my life? What am I in deepest devotion or commitment to? Like your beautiful son is in deep devotion and commitment to this movie, you know? Mm-hmm. And let that guide you versus staying stuck. I do this thing in Values and Vision where I actually encourage people. I'm like, I don't want you to name the values that you've had before. Like, nah, this is a chance for you to just like clean slate it. What are the values that you want to hold most dear just for this next chapter of your life? A chapter might be the next 6 months, the next year, whatever it is. Might be 5 years. Who knows? Might be until your kid has graduated from high school. But no, I don't think there's like this core identity and then hold true. I think it's like, oh, how do we ride the waves of this? And maybe I'm only 37. Maybe I'll see that there were core themes, but I don't know that I've yet identified. Oh, this was the bass, the drum, the lead guitar, the vocal of my life that was there all along, just in different mixes.
Interesting.
Haven't found it yet.
I think back to when I met with a career coach out of college when I didn't know what I wanted to do. And it was like, okay, we're going to go through your life and think about the things that resonated most with you and the things that gave you energy. Mm. And that's what I kind of am resonating with right now is like, what are the things that give you energy? Like what motivates you, right? Jack wants to put on a show. He wants to have a lot of fun with a season. He wants to be the one in charge. And those are the things that kind of pull him and move him through that. And so I think for us, we can think about what we've been what's given us energy in the past. Shannon and I will both say that interacting with other people gives us energy. Mm-hmm. I think Shannon will say that. I will say that. I really like solving problems. And so that's like a core thing for me. And so I think it's just trying to remember what those things are. And, you know, it's good to try and change things up and see maybe it is the stuff that you're doing right now that just like isn't exciting to you. But maybe you try those other things, like Shannon becoming a barista, and then you realize I should not be a barista because I don't like doing this. And at least you know that you don't like doing it.
Yeah, this is reminding me of episode 126. There is an exercise that I went over in episode 126. It's called the pivot points exercise, where you do go back through your life and you will think about what are all the moments that you made a change or you took a stand. And those can give you some guiding lights as to, I will say, as to elements of your core identity in the past. I mm-hmm. want to give yeah. people full permission that that may be different than what you want for your future.
For sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 126. That was nearly 100 episodes ago, Shannon.
Whoa. You guys, we are like prolific over here.
100 episodes, that puts us at like 2 years ago. That was 2 years ago, Shannon.
Smokes. It was a good one, though. And I remember that one helping me, too, when I was moving through change. And if I really come down to it, yeah, there probably are like service. Like, what would you say are elements of your core identity?
I think, I hope. Empathy, that would be fun. I would like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, service comes to mind for me. Like, yeah, just like having a heart of service, like being a person of service, being here to serve. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, let's keep going. We got deep. Let's see if we stay there.
We sure did.
The second thing is, I think Jack's problem was that he had been the Pumpkin King for so long that he lost sight of why that was important to him, right? Like, he loved causing scares, but he loved having fun with his friends. Like, you see him interacting with the three little kids, Lock, Shock, and Barrel, and he has a lot of fun with them. And they have a lot of fun coming up with, like, scary things. Like, when they're thinking, when they're working on scary Christmas, they're coming up with, like, a lot of really fun ways to scare people. And I think they'd gotten so good at it that it was almost like, oh, this is just how we do things. Like, yes, it's always going to be a 10 out of 10. We're always going to get an A because, like, we're very good at this. But I think that, for me, is a cool reminder of, even though you're good at something, if you get bored of it, you should remember why you got so good at it in the first place. Like, why did you go from, like, being a 3 out of 10 to a 10 out of 10? Because you like that thing. Like, what are the things that you liked that made you invest all your time and energy into becoming the best? Like, how did you become the Pumpkin King? And how did you invest all that time and energy into doing that? What were those steps? And, like, realign to those things. Like, you have fun, clearly, or you wouldn't have spent all that time doing it. Or you're getting something out of having become the best at that thing. So I would say that, for me, is a good reminder that we should, when we peak, let's think about how we climbed up that peak and why we decided at no point to give up on climbing that peak. Like, how did we get to the point that we are? And what was it that drove us? That thing drove us all the way here. Let's let it continue to drive us now. Like, let's let it reengage and push us.
Yeah.
Disagree, Shannon.
I do. Disagree. Okay. I disagree. Please. Just a little bit. I like it in some sense. I would say it depends on what the person is moving through. Like, when I am moving through a mini transition, when I'm just like having a bad day or week, and it helps me to remember my why. Like, oh, why am I a coach? Like, why do I love this work? But if somebody would have told me this when it was time for me to leave Target, it would have made me like put my heels in the dirt even more to like try to stay when I didn't need to stay. If it was like, no, but remember why you wanted to become an MP manager at Target. Remember why. It would have put more pressure on me. So I get very cautious with having people ask themselves too many why questions. I reserve why questions only for when we are clear about like who we are and what, or what we want to represent. And maybe that's what you meant here. Like, If Jack still wanted to be the Pumpkin King and he was really clear that that was his core identity and it represented his values beautifully, fantastic. Frickin' ask yourself why all day long to remind yourself. But if there was any part of Jack that was like, I don't know, maybe I do want to go be a surfer. Like, I would want to make sure that we're reserving why questions until Jack's clear on who and what he wants to be next, so that we're not getting his heels stuck in the ground on something that he doesn't maybe want to keep perpetuating.
I think that's fair. He asks a lot of what questions. He doesn't ask a lot of why questions.
Okay. It was maybe
what questions?
Yeah. How and what questions? I'm for all day long. I try to only ask clients why questions for them to practice being in deep defense of the future vision that they're wanting to move towards. Because when we ask why, it does naturally draw people to the past. And it draws people to a defensive stance. And so it's like, oh, then I want to make sure I'm only asking those questions when it's something that I do want them to really defend.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Continue.
Again, this is a 70-minute, 30-year-old movie aimed, I think, at children.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Maybe,
look at the conversations.
Maybe Rami's reading too far into this thing.
No, I don't think so at all.
Very valid.
I don't think so at all. I think this is a great conversation. And I think it's so incredible that you can have these insights on a kids movie. You're making me want to pay more attention to the kids movies I want or watch with Talia, because it's making me think maybe there's podcast episodes. And Rami, you used to say that you love it when we disagree in episodes, and then if we didn't disagree in an episode, it was a bad episode.
I know.
continue on.
Still, it's my core identity, and I don't want to change from it, Shannon. I found it. I'm going to hold true to it. Okay, the last one. There's a part at the end of this movie where after he's just had a horrible, horrible experience running Christmas because he should not have been running Christmas, where he says, "What have I done? How could I be so blind?" I think it really hits if you're like paying attention to the movie, because it just helped me reassure myself in listening to that with open ears and open eyes that, successful or not, that I've in a situation, if I've given it all of my energy and I've given it a sporting chance, that that's enough. And I should be proud of myself. That's it. I got nothing there. So let me wrap this thing up. Sometimes we just need a new perspective. So try things if you want, but maybe don't make that your new like be all end all. Because I think the swing here with Jack is, oh, you want to like try some other season? That's fine. Kidnapping Santa Claus and then becoming Sandy Claus and like making it into Scary Christmas, probably too far. So that's where I say, like, you, if you feel stagnant, you need a fresh perspective, totally cool. Taking over and like making something your new identity very quickly without like evaluating it enough,
that,
I think, is the wrong approach.
Yeah, agree with that wholeheartedly.
Try things, but maybe don't like go from surfer to emo overnight without understanding that you would like to be emo, or you want, or maybe you still want to be a surfer. I don't know. What else was I going to say? Reassure yourself that if you gave it your all, you should be proud of yourself, and that you should remind yourself why you are doing what you are doing, especially if it's something that you enjoy doing or want to continue doing in the future. All of this to say, maybe try new things, but maybe don't fully invest into that new thing without dipping your toes in the proverbial water here.
Yeah.
And maybe don't kidnap people.
Yeah, definitely don't kidnap people. Yeah, I think it's experimentation is what I'm hearing, and for that first one especially. And experiments by their very nature should be should have a limited scope and be like time bound, you know? So like, no, you're not going to be emo for the rest of your life, but maybe try emo for like a day and see how you feel.
Scientific method.
All right. Scientific method. All right. We'd love for you guys to connect with us on LinkedIn, Instagram, email us workplacehugs@gmail.com. What do we want to know from the people, Rami?
Do you guys agree with us? Disagree with us? We disagree with each other. So how do you guys feel about this whole thing? How do you feel about Jack Skellington and new perspectives? Let us know. reach out. What'd you say? LinkedIn, Instagram,
workplacehugs@gmail.com.
Let us know. With that, I've been Rami.
And I've been Shannon. And this has been Workplace Hugs.